want to begin by pointing out that there's been an announcement circulated. It was sent out to the Sunday school teachers, and it's about a program that the pastor is doing. This is maybe the third or fourth time he's done this. He's going to have a sermon series, and during that sermon series is encouraging small groups to go and study additional materials to enhance and enlarge the effect of what he's teaching. That's going to come in September and on into the fall. I'm telling you now that as we've done the last one or two of these, we won't be doing this in this class. I think it's too big to really have the effect of small groups. So I'm telling you that now so that if you want to lead a small group or want to be part of a small group, you'll begin to look around for how that happens. There's a book series that goes with what he's doing, and he's encouraging folks to take a look at that. If you want the details, this is on a piece of paper that's over here. Classes is over. Now, I do want to tell you that we have enjoyed our time away. We think that we maybe enjoyed this trip as much or more than any other trip we've ever taken to Texas, because it seemed like every day we were 15 degrees cooler than you were in Richmond. And I, to my knowledge, that has never happened before. There was a particular day where we felt we were just sweltering with a high of 88, and you guys were hitting 103. Those of you who lost power during some of the storms that came through and tried to limp along without air conditioning and other kinds of creature comforts for a while, that's tough, and I hope that that didn't happen to very many of you. Okay, we have been looking at the book of Leviticus. Your assignment several weeks ago was to read the remainder of the book of Leviticus, which I'm sure that all of you have done. The last time we were together, we looked at Leviticus 16, which is the discussion of the Day of Atonement, one of the special days in the year, and the details of what was involved in that. And what I propose doing is to take a look at the remainder of the book of Leviticus this morning. We'll see if we can do that. And as I do so, I want to bring you to Leviticus 17. That's where we will start. But I want to tell you that the first hour was interesting today. That is because those folks who worship in the gathering were not in the commons this morning. They were instead up over our heads. And the consequence was that through a good part of our Sunday school hour, we had some accompaniment from the music that was going on. Now, I don't know how much you know about commercial construction, but buildings do not transfer high-frequency sound nearly as well as they transfer low-frequency sound. So mostly what we heard were the drums. Mm-hmm. Now, in that spirit, here's what I want to tell you. If you look, and you have to look to see it, there is a drum beat that goes in this part of the Bible. And once you see that drum beat and recognize what that drum beat is doing, all the rest of it, which is the surface, it's the focus point, this is what you see when you come to it, it suddenly makes much more sense, because the drum beat that's underneath it, you start to understand what it's doing and where it is. So I propose to take you into this, looking as much this morning at the drum beat, so that when we're finished, you can either have experienced what you've read as a deeper meaning, or now you can be encouraged and motivated to go back and read with the knowledge of being able to watch for this. So, Leviticus 17 talks about sacrifice, and it talks about blood. Leviticus 18 talks about sex. Seems like these people had a problem with sex. We, of course, in our day don't understand that. Nobody in our day has any problems with sex at all. That was sarcastic. I want you to understand that as such. But what I'd like to do is have you look for just a moment at chapter 18. We're going to go back and look at the what the chapter's main subject is, but I want us to look for that drum beat first. Take a look at chapter 18. It begins with, "The Lord spoke to Moses and said." Look at chapter 17. How does it start? "The Lord spoke to Moses and said." How does chapter 19 start? How does chapter 20 start? How does chapter 21 start? 22, 23. Anybody see a pattern here? That's not the drum beat. But that's why they put chapter divisions where they have. that you are reminded this is what God said to the people. He has said it through Moses, and that's at the front of each of these pieces. Okay? So, look at chapter 18. The Lord spoke to Moses and said, "Speak to the Israelites and say," my translation has a colon at that point. What's the first thing he said to say? "I'm the Lord your God." Do you see that? Take a look at verse 5. What does it say? No, the very first of the verse. My translation says, "I'm the Lord your God" again. Does yours say that? Yours puts it at the end? Mine puts it at the first and the last of that verse. Okay. Mine in verse 3, "I am the Lord your God." And then it starts to say some things. Verse 5, "I am the Lord your God. Hence you will do certain things." And then at the end of that it says, "I am the Lord." Verse 6 ends with, "I am the Lord." Verse 21 ends with, "I am the Lord." That's the drumbeat. That's the drumbeat. Why is he saying that? I want to be very trite and very cliche because I want you to remember this. I don't think this says nearly everything that needs to be said, but it says it in a way that maybe you'll remember. I'm God, you're not. That's essentially a piece, a big piece of what's being said. I'm giving you instructions and guidance. What is my right to do that? It is my right as God to do that. I'm God, you're not. And when he's punctuating this with that thought, he's trying to get the people to see all the things I'm saying are things that are said for your benefit, for your understanding. The book of Hebrews says everything that happened with these people was an example to us to keep us from having all the trouble they had. To watch what God said, watch how they didn't do it, and watch all the problems that they got into because of that. Okay? So, back up to 17. The first half of 17 talks about sacrifices. And the big message is in verse 5. The big message of this first half is in verse 5. "The purpose of this is that the Israelites should instead bring their sacrifices, which they would otherwise offer in the countryside, to the Lord at the entrance to the tent of meeting, to the priest, and offer them there as communion sacrifices to the Lord." The picture that you have here is there was a casualness of worship, and that was edging into a casualness towards who you worship. And God is saying you need not to be casual. You need to be thoughtful when you come to worship. And this is something that he works on. If you start at verse 10, you see a shift. Verse 10 of chapter 17 talks about blood. And what it says about blood is you don't eat it. If you're going to eat meat, you drain the blood from the meat before you do that. Now, what I want to do for just a moment is try to help you understand what's being talked about here. What was the role that blood had in their worship? What was the role that blood had in the worship? That was the mechanism or means by which sin was addressed, by which a relationship with God was reestablished, even in spite of sin. And how long did that last? No more than a year, because we just got through chapter 16. You know, up to a year. The power of blood to address the problems and consequences of sin and to reestablish a right relationship with God was so important that God said, "Do not treat blood as just something to consume." If you take a look in verse 11, the first of that verse for me, again, I realize in some translations it may reorder things. The life of the creature is in the blood. They're talking about animals, right? The life of the creature, the animals, it could be the birds or the goats or the bulls or whatever they're sacrificing, is in the blood. I think it's repeated in verse 14. The life of every creature is in the blood. Middle of verse 14, it says it again. The life of every creature is in the blood. The power of blood in that setting to deal with the consequences of sin and reestablish a right relationship with God, at least for a short time, has made them say, don't treat blood casually. Don't treat that as just another source of food. Do we pay attention to this today? No. Why not?
because of Jesus.
Because we're on the other side of the cross, and animal sacrifices no longer have an effect. It's Jesus' blood that needs to be treated with respect. And the issue becomes very different for that. But in this day, in this time, God is saying there's a hymn that says there is power in the blood, and God is essentially picking that out. Okay. Chapter 18 talks mostly about sex. I want you to take a look at the first little bit of this chapter. We've already looked at the drumbeat that starts it off. The Lord spoke to Moses and said, speak to the Israelites and say, this is chapter 18 of Leviticus. I want you to look at verse 3. I am the Lord your God. There's that drumbeat. You must not behave as they do in Egypt, where you used to live. You must not behave as they do in Canaan, where I'm taking you, nor must you follow their laws. You could insert the word instead, observe my customs and keep my laws and follow them. Now, First Hour rebelled a little bit at this point, so I want to try to bring you along a little more gently. One of the most important scientific documents that you can use, in my humble opinion, in teaching science, one of the most important documents that you can use is the story of Goldilocks. I'm deadly serious. I'm completely and totally serious. That is a central theme in all the chemistry I ever teach. Let me help you with that just a minute. You remember the story of Goldilocks? She's lost in the woods. The bears are out on a walk. She finds the bear's home. And when she comes inside, she's hungry. She's tired. What does she find? She finds porridge, and she also finds chairs and beds. Right? She goes to the porridge. She tastes the first bowl. What does she experience? Too hot. She tastes the second bowl. What does she experience? Too cold. She tastes the third bowl and? Just right. Same thing with the chairs, same thing with the beds. You remember this? You remember this? Okay. You start watching chemistry. What you find is there's elements that want to give their electrons away. There's elements that want to take their electrons. There's a few elements in the middle. We call them noble gases that don't do that. Sort of everybody. There's this little Goldilocks piece. There's a stair-step line. These over here want to be reducing agents. These over there want to be oxidizing agents. There's always this little thing, and there's this behavior in between. It's not that the in-between is just right, but that you've got these two sides. Listen again. You must not behave as you saw people behaving in Egypt where you're coming from. You must not behave as you're going to see them behaving in Canaan when you get there. There's instead this place in between that I want you to be. I hear Goldilocks in there. Do you hear Goldilocks in there? Once you hear Goldilocks, you hear Goldilocks everywhere. It's amazing. Let me give you an example. Jesus said, I want you to find that narrow way. We spent, 5 months talking about that a couple of years ago? What's the evil one trying to do? Push us off that narrow way into attitudes and behaviors that completely take us off of God's path. And if that doesn't work, what does Satan do then? If he can't push us off this way, what's he going to try to do? He's going to try to pull us this way. You remember, we spent 5 months on this, maybe 4 months, talking about various examples of this kind of thing. The narrow way, that's Goldilocks. Don't go this way. Find this place in between. Okay? It's sitting right there in chapter 18. I am the Lord your God. Don't behave this way. Don't behave this way. Find this one path that's in between. But look at verse 5. What did we just hear back in chapter 17 about the blood? Oh, you've forgotten already. Come on, you can do it. The life of the creature is in the blood, right? Look at verse 5, chapter 18. I, the Lord, am your God. Hence, my translation uses hence at this point. That's a fancy way of saying since or because or therefore. You will keep my laws and my customs. Whoever complies with them. Mine uses the word complies. You could use the word obeys, follows. In other words, will what? Mine says find life in them. The life of the creature is in the blood, and the blood is a sacrifice to make you right with God. your life is found in following the guidance that I'm giving. You hear the parallel between those two? Trying to show you what Leviticus is saying. Now, all these things, what was the subject? Chapter 18? This is a tough subject.
Sex.
Gosh, I think by now people would not be so bothered by that anymore, have such trouble. This is interrupted by verse 21. 21 is not about sex. It's pretty much the only verse in there that isn't. What's that one about? Moloch was an idol that was put up. I don't know whether it was back in Egypt or whether it was coming in Canaan or whether it was in both places. I don't know. But basically a giant idol with a big hole, and you treat that hole like a fireplace and build a roaring fire in there and toss the kids inside the hole. Child sacrifice. And what does God say? Don't do it. And it interrupts the theme of everything that's there. Well, that's pretty good. That's two chapters so far, right? Chapter 19. In chapter 19, the drumbeat that I talked about goes to a frenzy. There's at least three times as many of those mentions as you saw in chapter 17 and 18. Chapter 19. What's the first verse? Moses, the Lord spoke to Moses and said, speak to the whole community of Israelites and say. And what's the first thing he says to say?
Be holy.
My translation has the next word, for. And that means because. Why? Because I'm holy. Be holy because I'm holy. A holy God cannot relate to unholy people. You want to be in right relationship with God, holiness is what takes you there. What's the obvious question? How do you become holy? And I think most of you are far enough along that we can just jump to the answer. The answer is, you can't get there by yourself. Holiness is not something that I achieve or that you achieve by the effort we might make. So there's a little problem here. We're going to watch how Leviticus deals with that problem. Be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. Look at the end of verse 3. I am the Lord your God. Look at the end of verse 4. What does it say? I am the Lord your God. The next time you see that, I think, is the end of verse 10. And you start to get the idea. Okay, here's the sections. Here's something to think about. And think about that in this context, because I'm God and you're not. And I'm giving you guidance for your own good. The next time you see it is the end of verse 12. You see it again at the end of verse 14. You see it at the end of verse 16. You see it at the end of verse 18. Do you see those places down there? That's way too many. Way too many to be anything other than a punctuation. Here's something to think about. And think about that on the authority that I have as God. I'm instructing you to think about that and to comply and to do. Everybody still okay? If you keep going, you find that over and over again. It's not every verse. Very often it's every couple of verses. But you find that all the way through. The end of verse 37, you still get one of the very last verse of the chapter. Everybody see those? It's fewer after verse chapter 19. Chapter 19 seems to reach a real high in terms of how many of these there are. So now with that in mind, let's take a closer look in chapter 19. Look at verse 9. Verse 9 and 10. If you had to talk about that, summarize it with a single word, what's the subject of those two verses? I'll give you some help. It starts with G.
Gleaning.
What's gleaning?
Picking up the leftovers
from a harvest. You will not harvest to the edges of your field. You will not go back and pick up what you dropped. And what does it say? It says something very interesting. This is the tail end of verse 10. You will leave those things for whom?
The poor.
The poor and... Some translations say stranger.
Alien.
Yours says sojourner. But the better translations say...
Alien.
And you're smack in the middle of the big political debates that are taking place in the middle of our country right now. The Bible is speaking to that. This is not simple. I believe in the laws that say people should come here in the proper way. But we have a mess because we've got people in our country who haven't come here the proper way. How do we treat them? The Bible has some very interesting things to say about that. And they say them in this chapter. It's in this chapter. The subject of the book of Ruth hangs on this thought. It was Ruth's going out to glean that put her with Boaz, and the whole of that story hinges on that moment where she goes and shows her effort and her work, because it's hard work to find the little bits that are left and to accumulate enough of those to make a couple of meals out of. That was hard work, and Boaz noticed her hard work.
Yeah. Forgive me for the most difficult. You know, you have these things.
I'll try to keep that in mind.
Well, I know you always do, but you know, you have these things such as gleaning and the blood, and things of that nature, which, you know, so the blood is not as applicable to our lives now because of the sacrifice of Christ. And then you have all these other things throughout the Bible that sort of teach, or especially in the Old Testament, that refer to how we should live our lives. Or that could be applied to our lives. You know, how do you pick, or how do you know, what is still applicable and what's not?
Let me give you the condensed version of what the authorities usually say at that moment. Okay? They say, look and see whether this is something that has been superseded by or has been affirmed by the things that happened in the New Testament. Look at what Jesus says about things. The things that Jesus affirms, the things that the New Testament affirms, those still have force. The things the New Testament says, you know, those were done for preparation purposes, but the time of preparation is over. Jesus is here. Now in light of that, so the dietary laws and many of those things, God dealt with Peter, God dealt with others on those kinds of things. And so I think the best answer I can give at the moment, in order to leave time to do some other things as well, is to say the New Testament is usually used by Christian groups as a judge of that. And the New Testament teaches the sacrificial system is now gone. That was preparation for Jesus' sacrifice. It has happened. It happens once. And we now live in light of that. But many of the other commands and laws and guidance are affirmed, commented on, held up by what Jesus has said. And Jesus himself said, I'm not here to abolish what's in the Old Testament. I'm here to fulfill it, to take it. Now I'm giving you my translation of that word fulfill, taking it to where it was trying to take the people back then. Not to leave them where they first encountered it, but to take them somewhere. And that's the best answer I know to give you.
Well, I mean, that's a great answer. And, you know, you look at the gleaning side of things. You know, you look at how they perform in Israel compared to the United States. You know, they still have the sabbatical there where they let things sit fallow and everything. You know,
I've taken a sabbatical. I went fallow for a while.
There you go. Good for you. I do it daily. But yeah. So, here in the United States, we form literally wall to wall. You know, nothing is left. The machinery picks up. And I mean, you can look at things like wildlife and...
Well, this is where a rabbi would step in. And I'm not a rabbi, but I honor that tradition. A rabbi would step in and say, you've got a company that is producing a profit. How much does that company give to its CEO? And how much does it give to its low-wage end? Where's the gap between those? That gap is what? 30 times, 40 times the size it was 40 years ago?
Right.
Okay, I think that's the law of gleaning for us.
Yeah.
I don't think it's in farming anymore.
No.
I think it's in the place of, are we allowing people to make an honest living?
Right.
And I don't know exactly how to apply it, but I'm pretty sure that's where you would apply this today.
Yeah.
And the rabbis, this is what they were good at. And I honor that tradition. Okay, let me stay with this for a moment. Take a look at verse 11. This is the next little bit, still in chapter 19. You will not steal. You will not deal deceitfully or fraudulently with your fellow citizen. You will not swear by my name with an intent to deceive and thus profane the name of the Lord your God, for I am the Lord. You will not exploit or rob your fellow man. You will not keep back the laborer's wage until the next morning. You will not curse the dumb or put an obstacle in the way of the blind, but will fear the Lord. And it keeps going into verse 15. You will not be unjust in administering justice. You will neither be partial to the poor nor overawed by the great, but will administer justice to your fellow citizen justly. You will not be unjust in justice. You will do justice justly. Did you catch that? Did you catch the Goldilocks that was hiding in there?
No.
Did you see it? What did it say? Don't be partial to the poor. Don't be overawed by the great. Find that path in between. It turns out to be a hard path for our legal system to find. Verse 17. You will not harbor hatred for your brother. You will reprove your fellow countrymen firmly and thus avoid burdening yourself with a sin. You will not exact vengeance on or bear any grudge of any sort against the members of your race. But you will... When Jesus was asked what's the greatest commandment in the law, his initial answer was that there were two. One was out of Deuteronomy, and one was out of that verse. Jesus said, you want to know the most important commandment? Let me give you the first two. I think he gave the third one when he talked to the disciples in the upper room in John. What was the first one? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. What's the second one? He came to this verse. And the context picks up the whole of this chapter. Don't mistreat people. Treat your neighbor, how?
As yourself.
As yourself. Turn to verse 33. Mine starts out this way. If you have resident aliens in your country, how does yours translate resident aliens? Yours says? An alien who lives in your land. I'm looking at verse 33, and I'm hoping to focus just on the phrase that my translation renders as resident alien. Yours pick that up as the alien who lives in your midst. Okay, does yours pick up, does it have different words, or is this the foreigner, and the implication is living among you, the stranger living among you. Okay? We're back in the middle of the big political debates of the day, right? If you have resident aliens in your country, you will not molest them. You will treat resident aliens as though they were native born and love them as yourself, for you were once aliens in Egypt. I don't know what to do with that one, but I think it's something we all ought to ponder. I think there is a right way and a wrong way for people to come into the country, and I don't think they should come into the U.S. in the wrong way. But they're here. And I hear a Goldilocks moment right there. You support this part. But that doesn't make you fail to recognize we've got people who are here and there is a right way to treat them. God does not love them any less than he loves you and me. Leviticus 19 is pretty powerful. It's got a bunch of other stuff in it that probably is just as powerful if I were smart enough to see it. But these are the ones that came to me. Everybody doing all right? Chapter 20. What does it start with? Yes, but what's the first big thing he says? Say this to the Israelites, but what's the first thing he says to say?
Any Israelite or an alien living in Israel, use any of his children to Moloch.
Yeah, we've seen that one before. What's that one? No child sacrifice. And that's leading off a chapter. And if you get further into the chapter, sex pops up again. Something to notice in verse 6. If anyone has recourse to the spirits of the dead or to magicians to prostitute himself by following them, I will set my face against him and outlaw him from his people. And then verse 7, sanctify yourselves and be holy, for I am the Lord. If you come to the last verse in this chapter, verse 27, any man or woman of yours who is a person who speaks to the dead or a magician, he must be put to death. Now, some very interesting things hiding in this chapter, but let's start here. Does this say that there are not any spirits of the dead to talk to?
No.
Does not say that. What does it say? Don't talk to them. And don't talk to people who do talk to them. Does it say there's no such thing as magic? Nope. What does it say? Don't have anything to do with people who do delve into that kind of thing. The first king Israel ever had, Saul, got himself into big trouble in part because of this. Now, let's stay with this just a little bit longer. I want you to take a look at verse 8. I think I'm in the right place. Yes. I'm still in Leviticus 20. I lost it for a second, but I found it again. Chapter 20, verse 8. Remember the other chapter began with, "Be holy, because I'm holy," God says? Remember that? Okay, what does verse 8 say? Verse 8 says something extremely important.
Consecrate yourself.
Keep my laws and put them in practice, because it is I, the Lord, who does what? Makes you holy. You don't become holy by your own effort. It's by God working in you. You can thwart that. You can block that by refusing to cooperate, refusing to listen, refusing to respond. But you can't make yourself holy by your own efforts. It's God's work in you.
It's very important because at this time they were starting to think that these blood sacrifices are actually going to do the trick for them.
That's right.
He says to him here that, "I want you to know, those don't make it, even for a year."
Those are in to get you ready for the one big one that's coming. Hundreds of years ahead, we're getting you ready. And for a short period of time, they have an effect. But the rightness inside of you, the holiness inside of you, only comes by God's action, by my action. I'm the one who makes you holy. Now,
The thing is that even those blood sacrifices weren't enough, even during that year, it was still the Lord who sanctifies them, pointing toward the future hope of Christ. So even though they had blood sacrifices, I would say that this is pointing them to it. But those, if they just stopped there, I don't think it was enough without Christ.
It wasn't. And that's what I'm trying to get you to see. Part of the drumbeat is, I'm God and you're not. Part of the drumbeat is, I want you to be holy because I'm holy. And part of the drumbeat is, the only way you're going to be holy is if I'm working in you. You're not going to do that for yourself. I want you to see those pieces. Now, some of you know the definition of holy, or a way to say what holy, that word, means in practice. What does it mean? Set apart. Good. Set apart. Got it? Verse 24. He's talking now about the land where they're going to go. I've already told you, you're going to take possession of their soil. I myself will give you possession of it, a country flowing with milk and honey, period. New thought still within that verse. What does it say? It's the beginning of a new thought. But what does it say? I, the Lord your God, have done something. What have I done? I have set you apart. The word holy, I don't think in total, but in part, means set apart. He's making sure you hear both of those phrases within the same chapter. He's speaking of individuals being holy. He's speaking of the nation being set apart. Set apart from what? From the other nations. Verse 26, "Be consecrated to me, for I, the Lord, am holy, and I will set you apart from all these people in order that you may be mine."
Mine is
future tense, "I shall." How interesting the translations are. That's why we want to make sure we hear them all. Okay?
One thing that hits me, I mean, I always think, well, it's in the Bible, that's what it is. And in 19, it talks about cutting the hair on the side of your head and your beard.
Did you notice I skipped over that? Yeah, I thought maybe you had.
Then it talks about tattoos, and then it talks about spirits. And do you know how many people, I've had a lot of people lately talk to me about ghosts. And I'm like, what? In Texas, a lot of people there have got ghosts in their house and stuff.
You mean, is that right?
Okay, listen again. Does this chapter say there is no such thing as spirits of the dead?
No.
No. What does it say? Don't have anything to do with them, and don't have anything to do with people who do have something to do with them.
Yeah.
Is there anything such as magic? Does this chapter say there is no such thing as magic? No. What does it say? Don't have anything to do with it. Don't have anything to do with people who claim to practice it.
It's a weird thing when somebody starts telling you that there's a ghost land, and I'm like, whoa, you know.
Yep. Let me come back to the main theme I'm trying to get, because there's one more thing I want you to see. Verse 26, be consecrated to me, for I, the Lord, am holy, and I have or I will set you apart from all these people for you to be mine. This is a theme that runs through the whole of the Bible. And I want to help you see this in three terms. Maybe by the time I get through, I'll only have two. As we listened to the drums, I knew that upstairs there was somebody on the keyboard who was leading the group. Who's that?
Right.
He's written a book. What's the name of the book? Erebon. What does the word Erebon mean? Have you read his book? Have you gotten a copy of his book? You've missed in some fascinating reading. I'm not finished, but I'm far into it. The word Erebon means earnest. Rhonda and Wayne are trying to sell their house. If they sell their house, what's the first thing that happens?
Earnest.
Somebody's going to put down some earnest money. What's that? That's a pledge against the full that's going to come, right? And David Bailey's written a book that talks about God has wanted his people to be an earnest whose presence and whose actions set the stage for the more full thing that's coming. Now, I'm going to get this bigger later, but it's big enough already. What does God want? He's taken these people and he says to the individuals within these people, be holy for I am holy. He says to the nation, I am setting you apart so that you won't be like the other nations. Right? Samuel was a great prophet, and as he came to the end of his life, the people looked at his sons and said, they're not cut out to do this the way you did it. They're not going to be any good at this. We want a king. And you remember what they said at that moment? We want a king so that we can be just like every other country around. And Samuel recognized that for what it was, a repudiation of Leviticus chapter 20. God says, I want to set you apart. I have set you apart. I'm going to continue to set you apart. And the people said, we don't want any of that. We want to be just like everyone else. And God said, I don't want you just like everyone else. I want you functioning as an earnest, as a process. Now, I want to stay with this for just a second. Yeah, skip over to chapter 22. I'm skipping some stuff now, but I think that's okay. You can go back and read this, right? And if you do, you're going to get a lot more out of it than you did when you read it through the first time. And you did read it through the first time, right? Right? You've done what I asked you to do. Okay. Go over to chapter 22. Chapter 22 is talking about the priests. It's talking about the food they eat, which is coming from the sacrifice. It's talking about the sacrificial animals, all that sort of stuff. You come to verse 31 and 32 in chapter 22, and you return to the theme we were just in. I am the Lord your God. I have set you apart. I will set you apart so that you will not be like the other people. Here it comes. Chapter 22, verse 31. You will keep my commandments and put them into practice, for I am the Lord. You will not profane my holy name. That's the way my translation gives the start of verse 32. Do you see that place? Can you read your words and see that that's parallel to what I've got? You will not profane my holy name so that I may be honored, I think yours may be acknowledged, as holy among the Israelites. I want you to keep my commands and put them in practice. I want you not to profane my holy name in order that I may be honored, recognized, acknowledged as holy among the Israelites. I am the Lord your God who makes you holy. I was the one who brought you out of Egypt. I brought you out of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord. Everybody okay? All right. Probably a dozen times, probably three times within the last 4 years, I've said something about this. If you've been in here regularly, you will have heard this before. There is a verse in the Old Testament that terrifies me more than any other verse because of the responsibility it puts on me as a child of God. That is an awesome responsibility, and I don't know how well I measure up. Do you remember where that verse is? Didn't think so. Ezekiel chapter 36. Hold your place here. I want you to hear the words. You look for Ezekiel chapter 36 and listen. I'm just going to read it again. You keep my commandments. You put them into practice. That way you will not profane my holy name. And if you don't profane my holy name, if you keep my laws and put them into practice, I will be honored, acknowledged, recognized as holy among the Israelites. I am the God who makes you holy. Okay. Ezekiel 36. That's the other side of Psalms. It's the other side of Isaiah. If you get to Daniel, you're one book too far. Ezekiel 36. The focus verse is later. I want to start at verse 21. I'm reading out of my translation. It will have parallels to what we just read in Leviticus 22. I am concerned, God says, about my holy name, which the house of Israel has profaned among the nations where they have gone. And so, say to the house of Israel, he's speaking to Ezekiel the prophet, say to the house of Israel, the Lord God says this, I am not acting for your sake, house of Israel, but for the sake of my holy name. My holy name, which you have profaned among the nations where you have gone. And here comes verse 23. Read it slowly and think about each part before you read the next part. I am going to display the holiness of my great name. And anybody who's a child of God would cheer. And then you read the next part. My great name, which has been profaned among the nations, which you have profaned among them, and the nations will know that I am the Lord. We cheer again. And then it ends. I'm going to display the holiness of my great name. The nations will know that I am the Lord when in you I display my holiness before their eyes. God's plan is to make us holy and to have our holiness on display. And that's his plan for having everybody else who hasn't seen God and hasn't acknowledged God to come to him and begin to become in right relationship with him. He plans to display his great name in me. That scares me. That is an awesome responsibility. And we do not measure up to that if we do not stay close to him and focused on him. And the whole book of Leviticus is talking about that. Here's how you do it. Here's what God is going to do in you. He's going to take you away from this. He's going to take you towards that. He's not going to let you go this way. He's not going to let you go this way. He's going to find a narrow path in between. And if you work with him, you're going to be amazed at what happens. And it's not going to happen because of you. It's going to happen because God's on display in you. The essence of Leviticus 22, 31 and 32 is right there. Now, we only have a little bit of time left. Let me go quickly. Chapter 23 simply lists and comments on the times of worship that come through the calendar year. The first one is in verse 3 of chapter 23. What's that? That's the Sabbath. What's the second one? This is verse 5. Passover. And it goes on from there. I don't think this list is as good as the list in Numbers 28. So I'd like you to look quickly over at Numbers 28. Don't leave your place here. It's talking about the same group of things. It's just that Numbers is a little clearer on what it's talking about. It's the very next book. You don't have to work too hard to find it. Leviticus 23, jump over to Numbers 28. And here's what I'd like you to see. Numbers 28, verse 4. I only want to know when this was supposed to be done. Every day, mine says. Now, I know it says later, it's at a certain time during the day. It's at twilight. But I just want you to pick up every day. Every day you do this. Every day you do this. Verse 9. When is this to be done? Sabbath day, which is what? Once a week. So every day you do this. Once a week you also do this. chapter 11, verse 11, excuse me, Numbers 28, verse 11. What does that say? At the first of every month. Every day you do this. Once a week you also do this. Once a month you also do this. Verse 16. Once a year. Verse 26. Take a guess. Once a year. Chapter 29, verse 1. Once a year. And then inside of that, that's actually the Day of Atonement. Once a year you have three things, and in the middle of that is the big Day of Atonement. Look at the pattern. God says, do something that brings your relationship with me into the front forefront of your mind once a day. Once a week, do something extra to keep that in focus. Once a month, do something extra. And several times a year, do something more. How does our calendar in the church compare to this? What are the parallels for this? Please notice, these are commandments. You must do this within the church. I hope, at its best, we do these things because we are grateful for what God has done. He has called us to this, and this is something we come to with joy. But what do we do once a day? Some kind of devotion time. Maybe read some scripture, think about that. A period of prayer, other things like that. Once a day. What do we do once a week? That's what we're doing now. Okay? Once a month, what do we do? I missed this in the first hour. We have communion once a month here. It's interesting how that pattern actually fits into Numbers 28. And once a year, what do we do? It's more than one thing, just like it was more than one thing here. Easter, Christmas, and maybe... I like that. I like that. I like that. Christmas, Thanksgiving, Easter, and maybe Lottie Moon. Right? Right? If you think about that context, it's pretty good. It's a commandment back here, and Jesus said pretty clearly, commandments don't work. It's got to be your response of gratitude and your response of involvement that brings you into this. But the pattern is still there. This is what works best. Okay? Can we go back to Leviticus 24? Leviticus 24 is some details of things that go on within the worship services. There's a commentary or two about the Ten Commandments that's hiding in there. Chapter 25 talks about sabbaticals. It talks about sabbaticals for people. It talks about sabbaticals for the land. It talks about the year of Jubilee. Those are things that I'm not going to take time to push any further. But it is interesting, that idea of redemption is the middle, it's the other half of the story of Ruth, and both of those are provision for Jesus coming, so that you can begin to understand better what he's doing. How Boaz functions towards Ruth is how Jesus functions towards people. Chapter 26 is the concluding chapter, and I want you to see this really clearly. Chapter 26 gets you ready for Deuteronomy. Chapter 26, verse 3. If you live according to my laws, if you keep my commandments, 26:3, and put them into practice, I will. And he begins to give you the blessings that come. And the blessings that come are staggering in their width, breadth, and length. Verse 14 in my translation starts with the word but. Does yours? If you will not listen to me, if you do not put these commandments into practice, if you reject my laws and detest my customs and break my covenant by not putting all my commandments into practice, this is what will be the consequence. The book of Deuteronomy, I think at least a dozen times, says these are the blessings God has in store for people who follow his commandments. These are the consequences that come, and they are awful, and you don't want them. For people who ignore and mistreat and detest, as it says here. You get a foretaste of that here. Chapter 27 talks about the needs to have fair weights and measures, and as such fits into the life of the community, but I think there's not much there for us to linger on today. We've now looked at Leviticus. What's your assignment for the next time we meet? Read all of Numbers. You've already looked at Numbers 1. You've already looked at Numbers 7. You've already looked at Numbers 28. You've already had some entry into this. That's your assignment for next time. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we thank you for the time that you've brought us together today to experience. We thank you for helping us understand that some of the most complex and most seemingly hard to understand sections of Scripture still have points of light within them that illuminate so strongly all the big things you're trying to say in the whole of the Bible. And we thank you for letting us get a glimpse of some of those today. Most of all, we want to pray today that you would work in us to make us holy, because that's not going to happen by our own efforts. Help us understand the awesome task you have given us to live as children of yours, to shine out your light in our lives, so that when people see what we do, they don't praise us, but they seek to learn more about you. For that's the plan you put in place, and you've chosen to make us a part of it. With gratitude for your Son, we thank you and praise you. Amen.